Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Tuesday, December 26, 2023, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we're on page XXV, the second paragraph there in the doctor's opinion, with the letter that starts with, "To whom it may concern," reading through three paragraphs ending with, "This man and over 100 others appear to have recovered." We're reading and commenting on these three paragraphs only today. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Yvonne A., 12 Traditions, Tanya P. Readers of the text will be Diane B., Dana P., and Shelley E. The reference number for Monday, December 25th, is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 20,967. That's 20967. And for this morning, Tuesday, December 26th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 20,969. That's 20969. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Loretta M., and Robin P. will do the announcements. Thank you to everyone for your service for this whole month of December. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Yvonne A. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning, everybody. This is Yvonne A. from BC, Canada, a recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Yvonne A. I will now ask Tanya P. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning. This is Tanya P., recovered in Michigan, and thank you for allowing me to do service. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, and the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Tanya P. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we are resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page XXV, the second paragraph that starts with the letter to whom it may concern, through three paragraphs ending, this man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. And we're going to be commenting on those three paragraphs today. I'll now ask Diane B. to begin reading and then share with us.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for your service. I'm so glad everybody's here this morning. My name is Diane B., and I am gratefully recovered here in New York. Excuse me. To whom it may concern, I have specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years. In late 1934, I attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless. In the course of this third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. This has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of these men and their families. This man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. Wow, there's a lot in here. So this morning I was listening, somebody shared that instead of to whom it may concern, they wrote in dear, and I would put in dear Diane, because this letter definitely can apply to me, you know, that I needed to be taught about this. And I will just say that in 2004, when I had my annual checkup, I was 330 pounds and the doctor suggested surgery. So I asked for a nutritionist. The nutritionist told me if I wanted to have a snack of Oreos, I should just eat 100 calories worth of Oreos. And my thought was, yeah, right. That, what is that, like one cookie? So then in 2005, I came back to OA. I have been in the room since 1986, but I left for a couple of years. And after a little bit over a year, I had lost 100 pounds. And my gastroenterologist at that time said to me that she did not know anyone who has lost 100 pounds without surgery, without the bypass surgery. And I just said, I know rooms full of people. Today, like actually 2 weeks ago, I think, I went for my annual checkup again. And this time, and I have lost half of my top, I'm like half of my top weight now. And my doctor asked me, how am I? Like, how am I okay with what I weigh? And what I said to him was that, you know, I have a nutritionist, a different one than the Oreo nutritionist. I follow the food plan. I said, I feel really good. And he said, great. You know, it's amazing. The medical community really doesn't understand this, or they don't want to understand this. I'm not really sure what it's about. But, you know, just like me, I always was trying to find the easier, softer way. And I couldn't do it. You know, it just didn't work. All those diets, whatever. I was definitely hopeless. And, you know, Dr. Silkworth says that he had come to regard Bill, this was about Bill W., as hopeless. And there are different types of alcoholics or different types of food addicts. You know, then it says in his third treatment, well, you know, we've all heard the expression, three's the charm. For me, it wasn't, because I had tried everything I knew of. And then even within OA, I kept going into recovery and then relapse, recovery, relapse, up until over 4 years ago when I really got down to it and I did the work, just as it's outlined in this book. And it says that we have to present, we have to present these conceptions to other food addicts, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. So this is telling me I have to do service. I have to do that 12 step. I have to carry the message. And when I first started in the rooms in the 80s, I never told anybody I was here because I'm not sure if I was embarrassed, but I think that I didn't understand anonymity. And so I wouldn't say that I was in this program. But today, if somebody asks me, I tell them that I'm in this program. They'll say, oh, how did you lose all that weight? You know, and I'll just say, I go to Ovaries Anonymous. Have you ever heard of it? And then if they want to know more. Thank you. If they want to know more, then I will tell them. And so now we have that over thousands of people, maybe even millions of people, have recovered from addiction of one kind or another. And that is just such a miracle. And with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Diane B., for getting us started. And I'll now take the names of people who would like to share on these three paragraphs. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us today?
Jody E.
Jody E.
Sherry H.M.
Sherry H.M. Who else would like to share?
Becca R.
Becca R. Okay, let's start with that. Those three. I have Jody E., Sherry H.M., and Becca R. Go ahead, Jody. Please share with us, Jody.
Thank you, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. This is Jody E., gratefully recovered in California. So very grateful. So to whom it may concern, and yes, indeed, that is me. It does concern me as a compulsive overeater. I was hopeless. I was beginning to think that I was going to commit suicide one day. I wasn't considering it any time too soon. I didn't have the courage for that. But I did think I might end up there. And in the course of my life, I found Overeaters Anonymous, thanks to my brother, who gave me a big book, and that was in 1988, also in the 80s. And as soon as I opened this book and began to read it, something grabbed me. Something grabbed me from this book, and that's why we often say that this book seems to have been channeled by a divine entity. And that's how it affected me the very first time I opened it. I started going to meetings shortly thereafter. As part of my rehabilitation, did I commence to present my conceptions to other compulsive overeaters, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others? No, not for years. I tried to sponsor, but I was not recovered. I wasn't recovered until I found this particular meeting in which we study the big book as compulsive overeaters. And we take it literally. We take this particular chapter literally. We apply it to us. What are my alcoholic foods? What are the alcoholic ingredients that trigger the phenomenon of craving for me? They may be different for you. What are they for me? And once I got abstinent and worked the steps as they are laid out in this book, then I became able to share this program with other compulsive overeaters, which I do to this day. And it is a wonderful thing to be able to do. And it is the basis of my recovery and of our fellowship. And another beautiful testimony to that, to this meeting, is that so many announce themselves as available sponsors at the end of the meeting. We must carry this message or we will lose our recovery. So, and this was also the first meeting where I heard any compulsive overeater say that they were recovered. And that certainly got my attention. And indeed, I too am recovered. I have neutrality around the food. I just have spent 3 days with family, with gatherings, with lots of foods that I used to indulge in and which would make me crazy. And I had no interest in them. Thank you, Dawn. And thanks, everyone, for being here. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Jody E. from California. Sherry H.M., please share with us, followed by Becca R. And if you're just joining us, we're on page XXV, the second paragraph, where it starts with the letter, to whom it may concern, through three paragraphs ending, this man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. So Sherry H.M., please share with us, followed by Becca R.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Sherry H.M. from Washington State, recovered compulsive overeater for the past 9 years or so. This is an amazing part because Dr. Silkworth changed our lives and millions of others. He was, a prominent physician known in the alcoholism arena to try to help them. But it says here, he specialized in those who he regarded as hopeless. And to be hopeless is to be completely out of ideas. Reminds me of many, many holidays and even not holidays when I baked this cake one time and, oh my gosh, I just kept eating this cake. And I thought, how can I be a successful person? I, you know, by God's grace, did all these really good things in my life. But, you know, then here I am just having this love affair with sugar especially. And, you know, that sugar, it was an abusive relationship for me. You know, it promised, oh yeah, this is wonderful and fun. And, you know, for, what do they say, 8 or 9 seconds, all was a joy. And then I would just drop right down the elevator shaft into the abyss of shame. And then just like, okay, on next Monday, I'll go on a diet, or January 1st, I'll go on a diet and do whatever. And then I just had so many medical bills from lupus and ankylosing spondylitis. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll try this nutrition thing one more time. So I remember 6 years earlier, my Al-Anon friends had told me about this program. But I wasn't ready at the time, not until I got, you know, just all these horrible medical bills. So I met with my friend, and she turned out to be my Ebby. We went to Starbucks. I had what turned out to be my last peppermint mocha and my last, you know, sweets. Because on the way home, I just threw up my hands to God, you know, so to speak. I was driving home, and I just said, God, I can't do this. I've tried so many times, and I failed. Please help me. So then I started doing the steps, and this reminds me of why it says they have recovered. So pass it on, and that's part of how we recover. And I'm so grateful for this program, and happy after Christmas, everybody. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Sherry H.M. from Washington. Becca R., please share with us, and then I'll be taking some more names.
Hi, good morning. It's Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic and bulimic, calling from Kentucky. And it's such a great reading this morning, and it reminds me of what a miracle abstinence is. I recently heard someone say, you know, the higher power I believe in today is in the miracle business, changing caterpillars to butterflies, and that's what I feel like I've experienced. And that miracle that I tried to create myself, and it just never worked. It was never consistent recovery. The self-will never worked for me. And how do I keep that miracle? I'm reminded is to just be in the steps with another person, to be transparent about my relationship with God, to be transparent about the miracle I've experienced. I have such a fear of what people are going to think of me. And so it's often a difficult thing for me to share what I've experienced. But what I'm finding is that the more authentic I can be with others, the more settled I am into being exactly who I am, which is a recovered compulsive overeater who has been given the gift of a miracle. So I'm just really grateful for the reminder this morning. And that's all I have. Pass.
Thank you so much, Becca R. from Kentucky. And I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share?
Mary Lee R. and Eugene Argren.
Mary Lee R. And I heard of gentleman Adam.
Adam R., Southeastern Michigan.
Adam R. And who are the voices before Adam?
I tried to chime in. Melanie A.
Melanie A.
Tom L. from California.
Tom L. And there were some voices before Adam who spoke. Who were those? Nope. Maybe I got those. Okay. Who else would like to share? I have Mary Lee, Adam R., Melanie A., and Tom L. Did I miss anyone? Okay.
Jordan,
go ahead. Who is that?
Jordan L.
Jordan L. Okay. Mary Lee R., please get us started, followed by Adam R.
Good morning, everyone. This is Mary Lee R. in Eugene, Oregon, a recovered compulsive overeater just for today. And on December 27th, 2005, I had just finished a two-week last hurrah cruise. I was scheduled for stomach bypass, and I think I remember gaining 15 pounds in the 14 days of the cruise. And there was a Friends of Bill W. meeting on board that cruise, and I am so grateful to say that it definitely changed the course of my life. It was a group of OA, not a whole group of OA people. There was all different alcoholics, drug addicts, food addicts, et cetera. And so it changed the course of my life, actually. I started on a food plan that worked for me with a nutritionist, and I lost 98 pounds in 18 months, and things were one day at a time, and it was fairly wonderful. And I'd like to say that I continued on that road happily, joyfully, and peacefully, but I didn't. And when my husband died, I didn't go back to sugar, flour, or wheat, but I face planted in volume. And it I in and out, in and out, and then I found a vision for you, and it was mostly in and sometimes out. And then in February of last year, I was willing. I was finally willing to do anything, and I met the most amazing sponsor, and I've never done so much work ever, 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 and I've never been so grateful for it. And yesterday was it was a beautiful abstinent day, and I was with eight other people that don't do what I do, but it was just such a joy to be present and to be grateful. And thank you for letting me share, Mary Lee R.
Thank you so much, Mary Lee R. from Oregon. Adam R., please share with us, followed by Melanie A. Press star one, Adam.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sure can.
Great. Adam R. from Southeastern Michigan, and grateful to be on this meeting. I originally came into program, over 20 years ago, and I got clean. I got abstinent. And was so for, maybe 12 years. And for me, time and habit has been a real double-edged sword because habit and the things I do to stay abstinent has pulled me through many times, but it also made it so relapse was so insidious and so slow that I could never see it coming, right? I really relate to what has been said about relapsing, not getting back into binge foods, but with volume. I did that. Each time I have had a relapse, it's been twice. That's what I would do. I would insidiously get to a place where I was eating abstinent food, but just, compulsively without boundary and with the volume. And, at the end of the day, it's still going to be calories in versus calories out in terms of weight control. That resonates with me a lot. It's interesting. I've not ever been on a meeting face-to-face or on a phone or whatever where anybody refers to themselves as recovered in the past tense. And initially this morning, I was like, man, that's bunk, man. I gotta remember that I'm in this on a daily basis and that it doesn't go away. And then I realized, that's really not the case. There's an asterisk by that because I know for a fact, I found myself a month ago, I had a situation that caused me to realize, thank God, that I had been in relapse. And because I could then see that the muscle memory and the time and the habit kicked in, I knew instantly what I had to do. I had to get in the program. I had to go to meetings. I had to go to a minimum of 3 to 5 meetings a week. I had to get a sponsor. I had to talk to, 3 to 5 folks, or 2 to 3 folks in the program every single day. I had to, I knew exactly what to do. And the reason I knew what to do is because I had so many years of doing what worked for me. The challenge is, it's often said that, the challenge isn't that we're addictive. The challenge is that we forget. And the fact is, I can be recovered. I am recovered with the asterisk that says, assuming I do the things that keep me that way. Assuming I do the things that I know doggone well will keep this compulsion arrested, and that I know doggone well will allow me to take life on life's terms. Assuming I do those things, yeah, I recovered. I won't go back. I know I won't. The only variable is me. The only variable between recovered and recovering, or not recovered, or whatever, is me. Will I do the things that I know keep me sane? Will I practice the honesty around the things that I know keep me sane, or will I not? There's no magic here in terms of the actions, right? So, Emerson used to say, do the thing and you'll have the power. So for me, I am a believer, but I have to do the thing. I have to do the thing. Higher power doesn't wave a magic wand and suddenly create recovery, all right? We have to do the work, and I have to do the work. And if I do the work, I will recover. I have enough evidence to prove that. I knew instantly. And I got clean again instantly because I did the things that worked. So, from that perspective, the program is a miracle. And the miracle of the fellowship. And, we are as sick as our secrets. And so for me, I practice just being being open and honest. And, you know, when I'm edgy, I get a text message out there immediately. You know, hey, I got this group of men that we have and as accountability and whatnot. And just like, hey, guys, feeling anxious, not going to eat over it, doing this, and this. And it goes away because I don't keep it inside as a secret. Doing service is massive, as was talked about in the reading. And I have not yet opened myself back up to sponsor, but I'm itching to because of how powerful it is for my recovery. I'm just unbelievably grateful coming back into the program that there are so many meetings now through the online and phone community that it's easy. So thanks, everybody, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Adam R. Melanie A., please share with us, followed by Tom L. Star 1, Melanie. Okay, perhaps Melanie had to step away. Tom L., are you there to share with us,
I'm
please?
Here.
Oh, go
I'm
ahead,
sorry.
Melanie.
Okay. So I'm new to this meeting, to a vision for you, but I've been in the program in and out of these rooms for approximately 30 years. And I've had really, really long-term abstinence, but I've struggled over the years and just kind of had, I'm a better than you type thing going on because I wasn't engaging in behaviors that I deemed that really, you know. Anyway, I've realized I've been in denial, and I was talking to someone in program and she said, well, what are you, because I was explaining my problem with sugar. And she said, well, do you do artificial sweeteners? And I was like, oh, my gosh. It was like she pulled my covers. It was like, that is it. That's my problem. And, yeah, and so I never thought I could go without those. I just didn't. But I think I just came to such a bottom, and I found this meeting. It was such a miracle. And, yeah, just focusing on the big book. And, you know, I can't keep what I don't give. If I don't give it away, I can't keep it. I'm not really sure how, you know, if you don't give it away, you can't keep it. So it is about giving this away. It is about being transparent. It is about sharing. It's about working this program simply but perfectly, you know. I mean, what has happened, it's like I feel like I've stepped into like a new phase of my life with this program. This feels like how it was when I first got abstinent like 30 years ago, and I was so committed and I was so on fire, and that lasted for about 15 years. Then after that, it just kind of slowly crept back in, and sugar just started taking over and I didn't see it. And then it was the artificial sweeteners. And anyway, long story short, I'm off of those sweeteners now, and food has never tasted so good. It's amazing to me, and it's such a gift. I feel like this is a gift. I'm excited, and I know how easily I could relapse. I'm not obese. I'm not overweight, so that makes it kind of, you know, that can easily feed my denial, and it's like, okay, no. Sharing and having a wonderful sponsor who gets it, it keeps me accountable, keeps me out of denial. And, and I just had to really be transparent with my husband for the first time about my addiction with sweeteners. And now he knows, and that's another cover that's been pulled that's exposed me, made me transparent. And that's really, I think, the key. It's just sharing to others, being willing to be transparent, admitting I have a problem. Thank you. That's all. And I appreciate this meeting. Bye.
Thank you so much, Melanie A. And if you happen to be just joining us, we're talking about page XXV in the doctor's opinion. The second paragraph, starting with the letter there where it says, to whom it may concern, through three paragraphs ending, this man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. So we're commenting on these three paragraphs only today. So Tom L., please share with us, followed by Jordan L.
Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. It's very comforting to be with other hopeless cases, and that's what I've been picking up from these shares. We don't have a mild form of this illness. I don't. when I first came to OA 20 years ago, I had some, one of the motivations for me was, well, I'm because, you know, my disease expresses itself in hundreds of pounds of being overweight. I can lose weight. I know this. I've done this before. I can impress all of you with how quickly I can lose weight. I was in my early 30s at the time. And I can become part of a club that finally will accept me. There's something I can do. My first sponsor was a big book sponsor. He was a beacon of service, kind of like Bill W. He was a salesman like Bill W. was. He had a whole group of men around him from all walks of life, and they included me, and I was part of them. And I could show them that I could lose weight faster than they could. My disease doesn't care about how quickly I can lose weight. It just wants to own me. It'll own me either way. Bill, we haven't read his story yet. It's coming up in the next chapter. I think I'm crazy. No, he was even more energetically crazy than I was. But I ate like he did. You know, my solution to this disease on my own was I was going to learn to live with it. I would give it whatever it wanted, and I would trust that it would take care of me. That's how I got almost to 500 pounds, living on disability, never going outside. Because I think, well, at least I have the pleasures of overeating and various other things attending to that. So that was 20 years ago. I have relapsed many times. I love the volume. I haven't eaten sugar in many years, but I ate everything else. And the thing about giving it away, appearing to have recovered, it's not that I'm thin. That is not the appearance of recovery. If you have the disease like I do, being thin is no use. It is not comfortable on the inside. I am not a happy guy. Sobriety is my problem. The solution is to get drunk. And I tried that very hard for many years. There is another solution, which as an atheist was very difficult for me to really calm down and approach. And it's not a hard one. It's not a hard solution. The only thing is I need to stop doing everything else. And I do a lot of stuff. And to find room for this solution needs a lot of room. I need to stop doing including the overeating, including making independent food decisions, which, as some very eloquent people just said, will walk me right off a cliff.
Time.
So that is my time. I pursue the solution. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tom L. Jordan L., please share with us, and then I'll be taking some more names people who would like to share.
Hey, good morning, Don. Thanks for moderating for us this morning. My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado and very grateful to be abstinent. The day after Christmas, and on a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous this morning. this is an interesting part of the book here, right? We just finished reading these forewords and the second and third and fourth foreword, they all have lots of big numbers about how AA has grown and expanded over the last, we're like coming up on 90 years or something now, huh? and so there's lots of evidence of how this works now. But when this was first written, there was no evidence. There was nothing. There was just 100. And the doctor was like, I'm going to use the language that they appear to have recovered, which I guess I find a little bit humorous now, you know. There's a lot of humility in a doctor, medical doctor, being willing to write about a fellowship, a spiritual fellowship of alcoholics, which at that point in time had a reputation of being not all that reliable, you know. But he was willing to write this letter for those first 100 to try to give them a little bit of credibility, you know, to try to help get this off the ground, if you will. And it's just so, it's so like miraculous and divinely inspired, the way, like, the way that AA came to fruition, you know, that it's like, yeah, God, there's no way we could have survived as a fellowship without this higher power, like, working for us, you know, it's just so clear. My experience, this is a disease of denial and despair. And I'm not really sure how I'm not completely sure how it is that this fellowship pulls us back from that. I'm still discovering that myself, and I hope I continue to. But what I do know is that connection and hope are 100% necessary for this to work, for this to be a solution.
Okay.
So we have to be willing to present our conceptions to other alcoholics, and we have to be willing to say to them, you're going to have to do this with others later. So thanks for letting me share. That's all I got.
Thank you so much, Jordan L. from Colorado. And I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. We're on page XXV, talking about the second paragraph, starting with, to whom it may concern, through three paragraphs ending, this man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. So who would like to share with us?
Robin B.
Barbara E. from New Jersey.
Larry G. And who else? There was a couple. I heard Barbara E. And who were the couple other women's voices before Barbara E.?
Robin B.
Robin B. And who was the other voice? Okay, if not, we'll stop there. Okay, so Larry G., Robin B., Barbara E. Go ahead, Larry. Please share with us.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Dawn, thank you for doing such a great job as moderator. My name is Larry G., and I am from California. You know, when I read this in the past and we talk about doing the work, there's really no hope unless I surrender. There is absolutely no hope whatsoever unless I surrender. And surrender, if you're interested, you can read more about that on the appendix too. I think Bill mentions 14, 15 different phrases on surrender, spiritual experience. I had that spiritual experience on May 18, 2020, on this call. And I had the kind of spiritual experience that I had in AA in 1981. I knew in AA, yes, there was, I would not drink again today, but also knew that I would not take the booze up again. I didn't have to. I had a deep spiritual experience, and over the last, I don't know, 43 years, I haven't picked up booze. And I yearned and longed for the same kind of absent as my AA recovery. And I have that today. But I don't care. I have gone through steps. I can't tell you how many times since I came back to OA in 2000. And many of the people I went through steps with were recovered sponsors. And I would get through steps 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, and then something terribly would happen. I would start eating again. I never surrendered. And I don't care how many 10 steps I do. I don't care if I have the Dalai Lama for a sponsor. I don't care if I attend, you know, 120 meetings in 90 days. Unless I surrender, it's all meaningless. And it's proven on this phone day after day after day of people who have shared their experience, who have had abstinence and relapse. And that's what's waiting for me. You know, I'm no different from a sick and dying drunk without a God, without surrender. If you knew me and knew my family, you'd wonder how in the hell did this guy ever get put together, you know, 3.5 years of absence. My mom died at age 52 of this disease. 52, this disease took her. My dad died a drunk. Brother, a hopeless alcoholic. Sister, a hopeless alcoholic. I have people on both sides of the family, prescription addicts, gambling addicts. Sex addicts, alcoholics, compulsive eaters. And I don't know how I got to this point where I had, on Christmas Day, this is my fourth sober Christmas, the usual is being served. And I just said no. I didn't make a big deal about it. It was not a big deal. And I'm not pounding on my chest, okay, because I am, again, a sick and dying drunk without God. But somehow on Christmas Day, I was able to spend time with my family and stay. And I believe the reason is, the single most important ingredient in recovery is surrender. And I pass to you, Don.
Thank you so much. Robin B., please share with us. Robin B., star one.
Hi, this is Robin B. in Ohio. Thank you, moderator, for your service. And I'm a compulsive overeater, living in recovery one day at a time. And when I was reading through these paragraphs, and for me, the third paragraph, that the type I had come to regard as hopeless, I was in a hopeless state. When I read that, I think of I'm at the end of the line, and there was no going anywhere else forward, and that was the state that I was in. And then in the following paragraph, this is all about hope for me, and that even though I felt hopeless, that there was hope, the miracle of my higher power directing me into coming into the OA room and giving me this hope, and how fast that this program works, and that by the third treatment, he has required certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery, and how fast that this program can work and turn around, and being able for me to be able to gain abstinence. This is just beautiful. It's just remarkable. And as far as like people with science and the medical community, they just can't fathom because of how fast this program can work. And that the other part of it is working with others, working with other humans, this altruism. And I had to look that up to help me to understand exactly what that means. And it's disinterest and selfless work with others. And I thought, well, disinterest, what is that? I had to look it up. Disinterest is forgetting about myself and totally doing service because of having concern for others. And doing the work not for my own personal gain, but doing the work because I truly care about helping others and helping them to give them hope, that there is hope, that they don't have to suffer anymore. And I thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Robin B. from Ohio. And Barbara, I'm so sorry. Please come back tomorrow. We'd love to hear from you then. But now we're going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Dana P. please read a vision for you? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Star one, Dana. Okay.
There we go. So sorry, Dawn. I was having some trouble with the muting. California. What a pleasure to be of service this month of December, 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning prayer what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Pass.